Welcome to After the Fall, Dispatches from the Women's Revolution in Northeast Syria. Episode 5, First Nowruz After the Fall. The week I am in Northeast Syria, it is also Nowruz. For those who don't know, Nowruz, or Nowruz, is a New Year's festival whose roots lie in Zoroastrianism. It is celebrated across a wide geography, from West, Central, and South Asia to the Balkans. Since the 1980s, the Kurdish variant of the festivities has been part of a movement to bolster Kurdish identity in the face of continued statelessness and repression. The mythology of Nowruz, as it was told to me, involves an evil king who demanded the daily sacrifice of the brains of two young men to appease the serpents growing from his shoulders. A cunning man was tasked with sacrificing the two men, but would instead kill one man and one sheep and mix their brains together. Eventually, a revolt grows against the king, and the young men who have been saved march on the castle of the king and defeat him. The young men are said to be the ancestors of the Kurds, and they lit bonfires to celebrate their victory, and so Nowruz, for the Kurds, involves a lot of bonfires. Openly celebrating Nowruz is a relatively new thing for people in northeast Syria. In the past, the Assad government didn't recognize the holiday, and instead made it officially Mother's Day. Repression of the Kurdish Nowruz festivities has also happened in Turkey and Iran, hand in hand with the suppression of Kurdish culture and identity. But in northeast Syria, Nowruz has been openly celebrated since the Assad regime's negotiated withdrawal in 2012. The festivities have already begun by the time I reach Qamishlo at the start of my trip. Different neighborhoods have taken on nightly celebrations that will culminate in a big citywide festival at the end of the week. After meeting the Martyr Shevin Commune committee members, I end up going to their Nowruz celebration that night in Qamishlo on a small soccer field in their neighborhood. The next night, the women of the Zenobia Assembly hold a Nowruz celebration in the courtyard behind their offices in Raqqa, and I attend. Although they are mostly Arab, the women of Zenobia are celebrating Nowruz, a nod to their Kurdish comrades and a good excuse for dancing and bonfires. This year, there will even be Nowruz celebrations in Damascus. These smaller celebrations give me a chance to learn the steps for the dances and see the beautiful dresses people have brought out for the occasion. But the big celebration, I keep being told, will be later in the week. The day I'm in Hasakah, I get a chance to briefly meet a handful of women who are visiting northeast Syria from Sweida, a region in the south of Syria. There are 4 adults and 1 child on their delegation. As we walk around a cemetery, specifically for people who have died in the struggle to defend northeast Syria, I am thinking about the significance of this delegation from Sweida. These women tell me that they wouldn't have been able to travel here before the fall of Assad. They say they didn't know a lot about the life of Kurdish people growing up, because Bashar and his father before him did such a good job of keeping people separated. Many women in Sweida are Druze, a religious community that follows a heterodox version of Ismaili Shiite Islam. There are somewhere between 800,000 and 1 million Druze in the world. Most of them live in Syria, Lebanon, Israel, and Jordan. One of the women I meet in Hasakah tells me that she is struck by how similar the Kurds and the Druze are, how she finds she has a lot in common with people here in the Northeast. She says it was too dangerous to travel here before the Assad regime fell, but once it did, she wanted to come see the women's revolution she had been hearing about. In halting English, she says she wants to make connections with other people who trust women. Then she tells me that she is excited about the Nowruz festivities in Qamishlo, and haven't I heard that Sami Shuker will be there? I confess to having no idea who Sami Shuker is, and she tells me he is a singer of the Syrian Revolution. I'm intrigued. Sami Shuker was born in the city of Kunetra in Sweida in 1957. He trained in music at the Ukrainian National Conservatory in Kiev. Since the 1980s, he has written music and poetry, creating 10 albums and performing all over the world. He fled Syria in 2010 in protest of the censorship of the Assad regime. His songs are often political, and so he was one of the first musicians to come out in support of the Syrian revolution in 2011. His song, Yahaif, became very popular. The song was released 10 days after the first protests in Deraa, when 4 people had already been killed. It talks about the events that sparked the protests, the children arrested, the live ammunition used on people protesting their arrest. Shukair went on to write many more songs about the revolution and subsequent civil war, documenting from France the events and the emotions surrounding them as the Syrian diaspora swelled. My meeting with the women's delegation from Sweda was so brief that I have no audio from the encounter. Instead, I turned to Hozama and her partner Cedric. Hozama is from Sweda, and she and Cedric have a media project called Interstis Fajawat, where they report on the situation in Syria. They have given workshops, written long articles on their blog, and when I spoke to them in May 2025, they were back in Syria making a film about Sweda. Hozama explained the significance of this year's Nowruz festivities to me.
Before, it would not have happened because the whole situation of the Kurdish community under the Assad regime, it was totally, it was very bad. They were oppressed. They had no, a big part of them, they had no rights. And even going there, I mean, it was not even easy to make these festivals, even for the Kurdish. I mean, they were always followed and prohibited to make these kind of festivals. So I would not say that the people, they would not go there, or Samih Shkair, for example, he would not go there because it would be strange, for example. No, but because the situation was totally different back then, and these things were not really happening, I mean, especially like in the Northeast. And now when I think now, I mean, it was very symbolic because, you know, like it's the first time that like someone like a singer from Sweda, he's able to sing even in the Northeast, in the very, very far away place, you know, and a festival that is very culturally related to the Kurds. So it was very significant. I mean, and I don't think it's only related because he's from Sweda. I would not think that he would represent it like this, that because he's coming from this community here, that he went to the Kurds. I think just because, you know, you want to enjoy this amazing possibility to, as a Syrian, to be able to go to any part of Syria and to do the thing that you like there with the people from there. For me, this is how I saw it, and this is why I appreciated this move a lot.
Some people have compared the situation in the southern parts of Syria to the situation in the Northeast. The Druze are a minority in Syria, and during the civil war, Druze militias maintained control over parts of southern Syria in a similar way to the People's Protection Units in the Northeast, especially by 2023. And with the fall of the Assad regime, I wondered if people in Sweda were thinking about autonomy in similar ways to the autonomous administration in the Northeast.
Also, this last month, we spoke a lot with the people in Sweda, and it's very interesting because they are the same kind of issues. They are the same kind of issues of we don't want to depend from the central state. We want to keep our self-defense. There is a strong feeling of self-defense. Exactly. The community should be protected, and there's no anyone else than the community itself can protect the community. So the factions, they are very strong, and also they are split in the movement now, because in the community now a strong split between the people who wants to trust the central state, but it's not that they want to trust the central state, it's that they refuse to be separated from the other Syrians, and this is very strong. And on the other side, there's a movement that is becoming stronger now, that is more speaking about federalism, more on the Kurdish way, and they make also connection with the confederal movement in Kurdistan, in Rojava. So they have meetings. Yeah. And they speak more and more. They are using the same kind of speaking, of way of speaking also than the Kurdish movement. You see that there are some connections now.
Cedric's mention of new connections between activists in Sweda and activists in the autonomous administration in the Northeast makes me think back to my first day in Syria, in the Congressstar offices in Qamishlo, as Congressstar activists explained that since the fall of the regime, their focus had become making more connections in the rest of Syria. It seems obvious that they were not the only ones shifting their focus in this way, but there were still many challenges. Cedric and Hozama spoke about a situation in early April where a group of activists from Sueda had tried to go to a conference in Raqqa organized by the Autonomous Administration.
I mean, how they were like stopped by like the HTS, by the new government and Homs, and they were arrested and they were transformed to Idlib, to a prison there, and they were beaten, and I mean, it was just, I mean, it was after like the intervention of the, like, with the governor here, like in Sueda, he was speaking that, yeah, I will do things and to release them, I don't accept this. So when this group, they came back, and the governor of Sueda, he wanted to you know, like, to meet them, to speak with them, and to ask, like, what happened, and to, you know, like, to say we take part of the blame and all this. And there was one woman, like one activist woman, from here, the region, who really, she stopped in front of the governor, and she was like speaking in a loud voice, and she was speaking about all the violations, like against these violations that were like happening, and how these people were beaten, and how that we don't accept this, and how also the women, like, who were arrested in this prison in Idlib, what they saw also, what they saw, like, other women that they were arrested there, and some of them, they have little children with them. And this woman, she was, you know, she was shouting, like, in the face of this governor. And you cannot imagine after, yeah, all the backlash that happened against this woman. I mean, everyone.
Horrible.
Like, yeah, it's everyone, they, like, neglected anything she said, and they just focused that she was shouting, you know, like, they don't accept a woman shouting. They were considering her rude. I mean, even from the community here,
yeah,
it was
especially
very, very
from the
strong.
Community, they say that this woman is shaming, shaming
exactly.
The community, like,
and that this governor, he was very calm, he was very quiet, respectful. They were saying that she's unrespectful. I mean, like, they the people, they denied the horror that she was speaking about, even the fact why she was there, and they were just focusing like that she was shouting. Like a woman that was raising her voice against a man. I mean,
and it's very interesting because it's the first time someone from the representing this government is somehow attacked by not attacked, but is criticized openly and so loudly by citizens. And it's very symbolic that it's a woman doing this.
Exactly.
And it was enjoyable to see this. And she was really right in what she was saying.
Yeah, and even in her reaction, even in her anger. It's just, you know, like, here, it's not acceptable. Like, here, woman raising her voice, it means she's rude, she has no manner, she has no ethics, and even they start to say, to, you know, to say bad words about these women.
And after she was arrested and she was mistreated in prison, she gets this backlash just because she's protesting against this. It's crazy also because you have all this question now about transitional justice, and you have more and more people in all Syria and all communities who are seeing that, who are really seeing that the government is not doing nothing for the disappeared, for transitional justice. They are releasing and giving amnesty to some main criminals, and they are even like using them to, they settle the situation with this high-ranked officers, so that these officers, they can give information about some other lower-ranked criminals, and this is now in all the cities. You see this. You see that the government is not doing nothing for justice, and they are just mocking the people once again. And this is more and more obvious. The families of victims of this of disappeared, they are protesting, and no one cares. And Sharahi almost did not even he met once with them, even if it's the main issue in Western Syria. It's the main issue. It's about where are these 150,000 people, and when you have some people who are now repressed or victims of violence from the general security, from this government, it's like it's raising important questions. And that this woman was shouting on the face of the governor to say, what the fuck are you are doing? Actually, you are doing the same that the Assad regime was doing against us. You should be accountable for this. The people, instead of supporting this perspective that somehow everyone agrees on. They focus on the fact that the woman
That,
is shouting,
yeah,
you
this is
know.
the problem. I mean, the
It's
whole focus like changed from the main issue that that we are suffering here, like that there are again people are being kidnapped, being arrested, put in prison, beaten, and the whole focus is shifted towards a woman. I mean, shouting. So you see, there's a big problem here.
Hozama is worried about the direction things are headed in. She knows there's a lot of work ahead. One of the women I met in the cemetery in Hasaka felt similarly. She talked about issues of gender-based violence in Sueda and the need to fight that violence everywhere. As her kid napped in her arms, she told me that many people have died in Syria, and she felt it was all for nothing. Her comment stayed with me in the days that followed. I wondered how widespread the sentiment was. So a month later, when I was talking to Hozama and Cedric, I asked them if they felt hopeful about the situation in Syria. It was early May, 2025.
We have here like a sentence that was like it's taken from a poetry from a very famous poet here that says that we are condemned to be hopeful here because we have no choice. I mean when you speak also with the people, everyone, they are trying very hard, you know, and saying that we want to be hopeful and we want to wait for the better things that we sure are coming, you know, like it will be better, it will be better. But
Because the worst already happened also.
but
People
I
mainly
mean,
their answer to you, but Assad was the worst.
yeah, but now the situation, it's on hold.
A week after I talk with Hozama and Cedric, there are renewed tensions in Syria. A fake recording of a Druze religious leader that reportedly had derogatory statements about the Prophet Muhammad sparked a conflict at a checkpoint in a Druze-majority suburb of Damascus. By the time the dust settled, 100 people were dead, mostly Druze. Hozama and Cedric tell me by text that someone they had interviewed for their film was killed and that they were heading to the funeral. As I put the finishing touches on this text in early September, the tension in Syria has only gotten higher. Mid-July saw clashes break out between Bedouin groups and Druze groups after a Druze merchant was kidnapped and tortured on the road to Damascus. Many Druze civilians are massacred. HTS security forces enter Sweida as Israel launched airstrikes against them. HTS eventually retreated, and as of September 7th, the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights has documented 2,026 people killed since July 13th in Sweida province. According to the Interstice Fajawat website, as of July 22nd, the population of more than 30 villages in Sweda had been evacuated and displaced. Most recently, local militias in Sweda have announced the formation of a National Guard for the region in an attempt to bring together different Druze militias. We took the long way to get to the Nowruz celebrations in Qamishlo, but we finally get there. I am one of thousands in the crowd. The venue is a big field on the edge of town, with a stage at one end. People in fatigues mill around the edges of the parking lot with guns in their arms. In the middle of the field, there is a big raised platform with a bonfire on it. There are flags everywhere. The festival runs all day, with many different groups performing. Everyone is dressed to the nines in traditional Kurdish clothes, including all the kids. I recorded some audio that day, although on a small recorder. The quality's not very good, but it'll give you a sense of the vibe. Sami Shaker performs early in the day with a small backup orchestra. The crowd seems into the music, and as he announces Yahif, the last song he will play, there are cheers. As he sings this final song, someone comes on stage and puts a scarf with the colors of the Kurdish National Movement around his shoulders. Here's a recording of his performance that day, recorded by Ronahi TV.
ومن هدفت الجموع يما صبحك البلسوع يما ويصلينا بنيران واحنا قلنا اللي بيقتل شعبه خاين يكون من كاين شعبي مثل القدر ينتهي باين شعبي مثل القدر والأمل باين باين يكون من كاين شعبي مثل القدر والأمل باين باين ويا حي أخو يا حي وزغر صوت على الناس الحزة يا حي طول بعمر الولد تعتقل كيف زخر صوت على الناس العزة يا حيخ قد بعمر الولد تعتقل كيف وانت ابن بلادي تقتل بولادي ظهرك للعادي وعلي هاجم العادي وعليها بالزين يا حين يا حين وهذا اللي صاير يا حين ودار عاوه يا حين وهذا
Later in the day, there is a performance by a group of teenage girls. I'm told that they are refugees, twice displaced, once from Afrin, and now once again from Sheba. Their group is called Koma Shahid Heva. During their set, people in the crowd circle up and dance, pinkies intertwined. As I awkwardly join in, I wonder when these girls will get to go home, and what the Syria of their future will look like. I don't have a recording of Koma Shahid Heva from that day in Kamishlo, but here they are performing for a local TV channel.
Dame
Thanks for listening to this podcast series. If you're interested in learning more about Northeast Syria, as well as the rest of the country, there are many places to look. One I would recommend is a book called Rojava in Focus that came out recently through AK Press, and another is Leila Alshami and Elia Ayoub's new podcast called Syria, The Inconvenient Revolution, that is out now through the Fire These Times podcast network. That's where I left things when I finished this script in the start of September. In the end, I got one more chance to talk to Hozama and Cedric, and I wanted to share some of their thoughts. Firstly, they had changed the name of their media project. It's no longer called Interstice Fajawat, it's just called Fajawat. They were both back in France, after escaping Ceuta through a humanitarian corridor that opened up in late July after the massacres. They had already written a long chronology of the massacres in July for their website, and so we talked more about where things are at now for people in Ceuta.
I mean, what's still going on and happening, even with the social media, even with the formal media, even with the friends. I mean, me myself, that the people that I know, the people that I supposed to be friends with, I received no any message. No one asked me about my family. No one asked me about. I mean. It breaks something. It broke something, and the signs are not finished yet. I mean, the indications that the problem is very huge. And you see the support that is coming, for example, from the Alawi on the coast. You see from the Kurds. I mean, it's very, very. I mean, every time now you see a protest that is or a stand that are supporting, speaking about what happens in Ceuta, you see always the Kurdish flag, for example, all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you see, there is a kind of this. I mean, it was since before, since
even here in Paris.
Yeah, even here in Paris, and it was since before, even when we met with the Kurds ourselves. I mean, in Damascus, there was always this speaking, these talks, that there is communication and there is coordination and there is something that will happen, will take place. So,
and one of the rare who sent you a message in the first days of the massacres, they were a woman from the Kurdish.
Exactly.
We met and we made an interview with.
Hozama and Cedric also talked to me about how opinions in Ceuta had changed since we talked in May. More people were thinking about a form of federalism or even independence than had been previously.
And now just what changed after the attacks, the first attack and the second attack. I mean, the first attack was already a shift, bringing a small shift. And the second attack was definitively changing. Like all these people who were majority on the Kerama Square and waving the Syrian independence flag, now they accepted that this doesn't make sense anymore.
The thing, they lost their meaning, this flag, this the fall of the regime, the people, this is the thing. They started to question many things, and this is very important just to clarify that many people, they are speaking their own opinions, because I see how much now everyone is thinking that these people, if they are saying this, is because, or they are pressured to say like this, or because they cannot express their free opinions or because only because we want to be united. But no, many people, they are expressing these opinions that maybe it's better to go for independence. We need federalism. We cannot go on with the central state anymore because it's their opinion. It's because they believe in this somehow. And the massacres, the shock that happened after this, that until now, even today, my family was saying that we still cannot believe what's happening and what happened. Yeah, it had this, this in the head. I mean, something was broken, and there is no way back. The way back, it's not a way back, it's a way forward, but that is still unclear. I mean, somehow how we will go forward from here. But it's pushing the people now to organize. I mean, there are lots of initiatives now that are happening in Sweden, especially regarding health and education. There are people abroad are sending money, and the people inside, they are trying to organize, especially for schools, because many also of schools now, all the people that they left their villages, they are living in these schools now. So now people are thinking how we can not how we can start really normally with this new year with the children, how we can make the education system. Maybe we should try to focus on the basic materials, basic subjects, sorry, in school, and the health system. And yesterday
Yeah, the traffic police.
traffic police, they started their a normal work 2 days ago. So I mean, there is the people that are active and doing this now without really thinking where it's going.
Hozama and Cedric had also heard the rumors that I mentioned in an earlier episode about the HTS-led government claiming to be amassing troops near SDF-held territory in Deir ez-Zor.
But there's this thing that you spoke about here, like this, that we read it in the news, that there were 50,000 men are deployed from the Ministry of Defense in the desert next to Tadmor, to Palmyra, ready to attack the northeast of Syria. And yeah, in October, unless I don't know what. And we see also all this unclear issues surrounding a whole camp, all the attack against it, all the there's something unclear happening there, in this camp also, who's controlling and who wants to take control. And America also saying that the new government should take control. And
I think if they would like to play the card that they play in Sweden, they cannot play it, the tribal card, to use the tribes to justify anything in the northeast. So I think now they have to reshuffle again, like how will be what will be the approach. They were like on the coast, they had a specific approach, and the tribes they part participated, but they were not the main actors. And then in Sweden, the main actors became the tribes, and they had another some kind of other approach to justify the intervention. And now in the northeast, they have to invent a new reason. And yeah, Al-Hol could be a reason, some kind of Daesh uprising, you see, something like this, a Daesh uprising, and that they would say, oh, we need to intervene to bring back order in the northeast because the SDF is not able to control or something like this. I don't see.
But you see how you say the contradiction, because in Daraa, for example, there is a big now big issue there regarding the ISIS fighters who are coming back now, who are killing people from Daraa, and now they're coming back and they're bragging about
To
them coming
settle
back.
there, come home.
And even bragging about being part of the general security of the new government. And the people, they're very scared. They don't want this. They are against this, but they cannot do nothing. And they are arresting people who are coming back, from Germany, from the people who were left more than 10 years ago. They are the people who are being arrested and disappeared in prisons. And these people who are coming back from when they were joining ISIS, they are just roaming around. And they are part of, they are recruited. I mean, and they're known, these
And
people.
I mean, we saw it. We
We
saw
saw it, yeah.
them on many pictures, but also on with our own eyes. We saw these guys with the ISIS logo on their clothes.
When I asked what they were working on now, they talked about trying to connect with others in the diaspora who were trying to do the work of documenting the horrors of the massacres in Ceuta. They had captured photos and video of some of the worst things imaginable.
We're following hour by hour what's happening in Sweden, and I mean there's developments all the time taking place, and I hope that yeah this podcast or the people they would learn more also, like in case of things developing going, I don't know, there will be more support, there will be more people are you know aware about what's happening and in this whole region, you know, because it's all linked somehow how it's developing in Palestine and Sweden and Syria and yeah, so maybe we'll make another podcast lately and after, and we will maybe share other developments, we don't know.
As I put the final touches on this podcast in mid-October, Al-Shara's government has just released the list of official holidays recognized by the new Syrian state, and it doesn't include Nowruz. There have been demonstrations in Qamishlo and other cities in the northeast protesting this fact. It's unclear what will happen for Nowruz next year. That's it for the first part of this podcast mini-series. Stay tuned for future bonus episodes. This podcast was written, produced, and sound engineered by me, Virginia Lee. You can check out more of my radio journalism on the Prison Radio Show, which airs on CKUT 90.3 FM, a community radio station in Montreal. The Prison Radio Show is online at prisonradioshow.wordpress.com or wherever you get your podcasts. After the Fall would not have happened without support from my co-collective members at the Prison Radio Show, the staff at CKUT, the discretionary fund at the Quebec Public Interest Research Group at Concordia University, and the Fredonia Grant Project. Many thanks to all the voice actors, the translators, my fellow delegation members, and our hosts from Congress Star, as well as Hozama and Cedric from Fajawat and Clara in Washington, D.C. After the Fall's theme music is from Koma Shahid Heva's performance on Jin TV on October 18, 2024, and most of the shorter musical excerpts in this episode are from the song Sok, from Shahryar Jamshidi's album My Sunset Land Rojava. The chants and other sound interludes are recordings I made at the Nowruz Festival in Qamishlo. The photograph used in the art for this podcast was taken by Kitoko Shargwa. To keep up with Hozama and Cedric's project, check out interstice-fajawat.org. That's interstice-fajawat.org. To keep up with the women of Congressstar, you can go to congra-star.org. That's KONGRA-STAR.org, and you can sign up for their newsletter. Check out the show notes for this episode to find links to relevant articles and further resources. And as always, if you have any questions or comments, you can reach out to me at afterthefallpod@riseup.net.